Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Gluten-free. You see it proclaimed on more and more products in the grocery store these days. What was once the provenance of health food stores is now mainstream. But why? Only a small portion of the population has celiac disease, one out of every 133 people. That's less than 1% of the population, 2.3 million people. Are we confusing a very specific and serious illness with a wheat allergy or a gluten sensitivity? Are we eating in such a way that we're becoming more gluten intolerant? Or are the symptoms of having a problem with gluten so diverse that anyone can claim they need to be gluten-free? We are turning now to our go-to nutritionist, Marion Nessel, to sort it all out. She's the Paulette Goddard Professor in NYU's Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health. Welcome back to WNYC, Marion.
Oh, glad to be here, Amy.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. Do you have celiac disease? How did it get diagnosed? Or are you choosing to go gluten-free because doing so seems to make you feel better? What made you decide gluten was your problem? Give us a call at 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. First of all, Marion, what is gluten? I know it's a major component of wheat, but it should not be used interchangeably with the word wheat.
No, it's a protein in wheat. Wheat has lots and lots of different kinds of protein, and the protein that's called gluten happens to be one that some people are allergic to. Some people are allergic to it in the usual way that people have food allergies. They get rashes, they sneeze. In really rare cases, they get anaphylactic shock, but that's extremely rare. But gluten also has other properties, and some people have a genetic inability to digest wheat proteins and gluten protein appropriately, and there's a fragment of the improper digestion that turns out to have toxic properties. But that's quite different than allergies. That's considered an autoimmune disease.
You're talking celiac disease.
Celiac disease.
Right.
It's given a name. It used to be called celiac sprue. Now it's called celiac disease. And it's quite different than a regular protein allergy, because what this toxin does is to essentially destroy the cells of the digestive tract, so that the villi, the little fingers that have all the surface area that does the digestion, get flattened out, and people have terrible problems with digestion. It's like having extreme diarrhea or something like that, and they develop other problems as well.
Right, it leads to an inability to absorb nutrients.
Yeah, you can't absorb nutrients, and it's essentially the same as having a very severe diarrhea, except that sometimes it only affects a small portion of the intestine, and the rest of it works okay. But what makes it really complicated is that many of the symptoms of glucose intolerance are the same as those of celiac disease, and it covers every symptom that everybody has: runny noses, rashes, irritability, tiredness, fatigue, you know, all of those vague symptoms that are caused by loads and loads of things. And so
right,
lots of people think they have gluten intolerance. They go off gluten. They feel better, and problem solved.
And just to circle back, gluten exists in grass-like grains, including barley, rye, kamut, and spelt. And the qualities that we get out of gluten that makes gluten great is it provides elasticity and a glue-like capacity to hold flour products together. So it's chewiness in your bread or your pasta.
Yeah, all that elasticity in
right,
the bread is what makes bread wonderful.
Exactly. But it's also, my understanding is just eliminating those grains from your diet doesn't necessarily mean you're gluten-free. You have to watch for gluten in sauces, in flavorings. It's in the binders and supplements and vitamins. If you are a celiac disease sufferer, you really have to be rigorous. Am I understanding this correctly?
Eternal vigilance is the term. term. And the food supply doesn't make it easy for you, because even though wheat is supposed to be labeled on food packages, there are lots and lots of ways in which food companies somehow get wheat into products without labeling them, so that's a problem. If you go to a restaurant, you want to make sure that there are no flour sauces or anything with wheat or barley in it, or anything that is cross-contaminated with wheat, rye, or barley. And this just requires a level of vigilance in that is really, really difficult for adults and impossible for children.
So if you're
somebody who has diagnosed celiac disease, and we should talk about the diagnosis issue because it's not trivial.
It's tough. There's a test, but the test is often inconclusive. We will talk about that. I'm speaking with Marion Nessel, a nutritionist at NYU, about gluten-free diets. Are they becoming trendy? Are we becoming more gluten intolerant? And if so, why? Or is it just that because going gluten-free addresses a range of issues, you don't have to be have celiac disease in order to benefit from being gluten-free? Marion Nessel, I just wanted to go back on this, touch back on this issue of a wheat allergy and how it is different from the celiac disease. A wheat allergy is a histamine response, right?
Yeah, or some kind of antibody response that it's like any other food allergy, and you solve the problem by avoiding it, but it's not usually life-threatening. Sometimes it is, but very rarely. But it's uncomfortable, and people get skin rashes and runny noses and wheezing and asthma and other kinds of reactions to these kinds of things that are very unpleasant. But celiac disease is something different than that because of the flattening of the villi in the intestine. That puts it in a completely different category.
So it makes me wonder, given all of these wide range of symptoms that you've been mentioning, and that I refer listeners to a really great website I found, gluten-intolerance-symptoms.com. Range of symptoms, abdominal distension, irritable bowel syndrome, fatigue, bloating, gas, to joint pain, ADD, vomiting, numbness and tingling in one's hands, and depression. I mean, a wide range of things. So, which makes me wonder, is this a fad like Candida was in the 1990s? There's something for everybody to identify with.
Yeah, there's something for everybody. And if you have these symptoms, and everybody has these symptoms sometimes, you think, well, what can I do to get rid of these symptoms? I'll go off gluten, you go off wheat, rye, and barley, and all of a sudden you start feeling better, and you think you've solved your problem, and you're self-defined as gluten intolerant, or as somebody who needs a gluten-free diet. And if parents have kids who are jumping off the walls and behaving badly and aren't learning in school and have rashes and whatever, and they take them off of gluten, the kids suddenly seem to get better, then again, they feel like they've diagnosed their problem, whereas the actual diagnosis of real celiac disease is much more complicated and involves intestinal biopsies, amongst other things, and trials of using gluten and not using gluten. And these are difficult, expensive, and invasive tests, and a lot of people don't want to bother doing them. So why not do it yourself? If your kid feels better, if you feel better, you define yourself as being gluten intolerant, you don't eat gluten, and the problem is solved.
Constance, I'd like to get a call in. Constance from Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Constance.
Good morning.
You started going gluten-free when?
About 5 years ago.
And why?
Because I was 55 years old, every year an extra 5 pounds. 4 years later, you're 20 pounds overweight. And I could still run for a cab, but I just didn't feel like I had enough energy. And actually, three friends from different parts of the country right around that time had gone on the blood type diet, which I know some people believe in and some don't, but they had incredible results. And I gave it a try, and the main thing that I found that helped me with cutting out gluten and also corn syrup. And within 2 weeks, I felt incredibly better. And in 9 months, without changing anything else about my diet, I didn't give up sugar. I didn't give up, you know, fat and meat. I had lost 24 pounds.
Wow, just by giving up gluten.
I'm not a celiac. I do cheat. If I, you know, go to someone's house and they're serving pasta, I don't say, oh, I'm sorry, I can't eat this. But I do notice that my digestive system then is sluggish for a couple of days after I do cheat. So,
Constance, thank you for your call. Yeah, Marion Nestle, would that mirror what a lot of people would find? Why? Well, let me ask this. Why is it that gluten would cause Constance to feel sluggish?
Well, she lost 25 pounds when she went off of it. That's completely understandable. She wasn't eating a lot of bread, pasta, cakes, and other kinds of very highly caloric products that have a lot of calories in them. So it makes perfect sense to me. Wheat is not an essential nutrient. It's perfectly possible to have a really healthy diet without it. So it's very hard to argue that somebody who goes off of it is making any kind of nutritional mistake. I wouldn't argue that at all. I don't know whether her weight loss was due to the fact that she had some kind of gluten problem or whether she was just reducing her calories, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I'm just wondering about the effects of going gluten-free. I mean, Wimbledon champion Novak Djokovic had a breakout year, rising from number three to number one in the world since swearing off gluten last year. And he's also had an amazing streak. He's 48-1 this year. So more mental acuity because you give up gluten? I don't know.
Well, again, a healthy diet is perfectly possible to, and in fact, in some ways, easier to eat a healthy diet because wheat is going to be in all of the highly carbohydrate, highly caloric foods that people in America tend to eat too much of.
Yeah.
So not eating them seems like a good idea.
Vicky from Manhattan.
In general,
Vicky,
whether you're gluten intolerant or not.
Vicky from Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Vicky.
Oh, yeah, hi. I was suffering from migraines, and at one point they were getting pretty intolerable. So I went to a physician who had this more naturalistic approach, I don't know the word, and he suggested I might try avoiding gluten and dairy. So I cut those out, and the migraines were reduced considerably, so I've stuck with that for about the last 10 years.
Did you ever experiment to try to see which one was it, dairy or
gluten? I'm going to push this. I want to taste that piece of cake and stuff. And there seems to be a point where I think it's maybe causes some sort of inflammation. And I found a lot of good substitutes. There's also, you know, dairy. That's another issue.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, so it definitely seems to be that if I go off the straight and narrow more than a tiny bit, I start getting a migraine a day or two later. It's like a time delay, so it's a little hard to correlate exactly.
Vicky, thank you for your call. Laura from South Orange, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning.
And your son actually has celiac disease.
He does. I have a four-year-old son who was diagnosed last August. He started off with sort of somewhat, well, the symptoms that he had was he was vomiting repeatedly and randomly over the period of several months, and it didn't appear to be associated with any virus or anything like that. And then he also, and I could not discern, you know, I was trying to do a food diet, a sort of food diary to figure out if there was any, if I could see any link between what he was eating. And he ended up having blood work and then an endoscopy. He also had a distended belly. So those were the two things that brought us in. We didn't have the diarrhea, which tends to be more common, I think.
And Marion Nestle, we were talking earlier about how, Marion and I were talking earlier about how difficult it is for to avoid gluten. Has it been tough, Laura, with your child to have him say no to wheat products?
I mean, I have to say it's it's been quite a challenge. It's definitely, it was a, but it's better now than it would have been 10 years ago, because I've spoken to many people who've had celiac for some time, and there are so many more products available in the grocery stores. What we ended up doing is converting our entire household to gluten-free so that I don't have to tell a babysitter, he can have this, he can't have this.
Right.
Cross-contamination with this. So our entire house is gluten-free. The non-celiac members of my house eat gluten outside of the house. My little three-year-old, when he was diagnosed, I mean, he was amazingly perceptive about, and he calls it glue-free, and he'll say, is that glue-free, Mommy? Is that glue-free? You know, and he knows that he gets, it's pretty quick, and he gets violently ill if
wow.
he has gluten. So, you know, every time I go to a birthday party, I take my own pizza and my own cupcake. I have a whole batch of frozen cupcakes in the freezer.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that one of the greater challenges for us is going out to restaurants. I've been a little apprehensive about that. There are certain, I mean, New York is great because there are a number of actually gluten-free restaurants or definitely gluten-savvy restaurants.
And bakeries.
Yes, and bakeries. Yeah. And we, that too, which is fantastic.
Right.
I know that's not true throughout the country, but I'm just, you know, I know there's this trend of increasing in awareness, and I have to say for those who suffer from celiac disease or have to deal with this, the increased awareness and availability in grocery stores and restaurants is a boon for people who have to deal with this.
Right.
One of the challenges with restaurants is I think the cross-contamination issue. That's huge.
You have to be very careful. Laura, we'll leave it there. It's a great wrap-up of this segment on gluten-free eating. Marion Nessel, nutritionist, the Paulette Goddard Professor in the Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health at New York University, my guest today. She blogs at foodpolitics.com. Marion, thanks so much for joining me.
Pleasure to be here.
Coming up, calling all food truck fans, what are your favorite food trucks? Which ones are you following on Twitter? Which ones are you willing to rush out of the office the moment you hear it's pulled up to the curb? Give us a call at 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC.